What's up, sports fans? Welcome to another episode of Sports Odds and Ends. I'm King Kaz, and joined, as I always am, by my good friend and co-host extraordinaire, the one, the great JVZ.
I love the sports season.
Do you?
Well, okay, like, I love the chaos of it. It's like we're just seeing a whole lot of unpredictable things happen, things that only really seem to happen because everybody is scrambling and I think he's, you know, just for as an example, like I was watching F1 this morning and a car crashed on the not even like the formation lap, but like the lap just when everybody comes out of the pits for the first time. And
like the setup lap,
the setup lap.
Yeah.
Pace
lap, as they call it in NASCAR.
Yeah. So his car was getting repaired on the fucking starting grid and they managed to get it done in time. And that was Max Verstappen's car. And he finished in second in the race because they managed to get all that taken care of in time. It was pretty crazy. And only the kind of thing that you see in COVID sports and maybe never again, except for baseball. Baseball will, like, they play so many games that you're gonna see everything that is supposedly rare is gonna happen at least once. But yeah, other sports, it's a lot of scrambling, a lot of trying to figure things out on the fly, which can be some good, some bad. Sometimes it's unsafe, but yeah, at the very least, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so let's go down the run-up, because there's some of those things that we definitely want to talk about, especially when we get into talking about the NFL this week. But let's start with our roundup and kind of talking about some things that we've kind of had on our radar. So the National Women's Soccer League Challenge Cup has been going on. We're starting to see how that is playing out, who the favorites are going to be, who are in positions to win and who are doing really well. One of the big things coming out of this has been kind of exceptional defense, but very good goalkeeping performances.
Yeah, and I think if you are a fan of just goals in general, then this is kind of a boring tournament. But yeah, I think I like having watched a couple of these games, I think the offense has been fine. It's just been exceptional goalkeeping. And you know, there's been one goal scored in all four quarterfinal matches. And when I talk about like the, you know, the chaos, I mean, the top three seeds have been upset. You know, the number four seed Houston Dash are the highest seed left in this tournament. And I mean, the entire thing started with chaos, with Orlando having to sit out the tournament because they had too many positive COVID tests. And then they basically had a four game regular season. And now, you know, and in the playoffs, the team that was undefeated, North Carolina, basically had the only goal scored on them in this entire quarterfinal round by the number eight seed Portland Thorns. So they were upset. The number two team, Washington, was upset. Number three was upset. So now we got the Portland Thorns versus the Houston Dash and the Chicago Red Stars versus Sky Blue FC. In the semifinal round, and that's going to happen on Wednesday, the 22nd, on CBS All Access. And then the final is going to be on CBS proper at and on CBS All Access at 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, the 26th, if you want to tune in.
I feel like we have to. I'm not super familiar with most of the teams that are left, but we got to go around and make a pick.
I'm going to go with the Chicago Red Stars because, I mean, as we said, the goalkeeping has been key, and they've they've probably got the best goalkeeper out of all of them. They have Alyssa Nayer, who has been kind of, I don't want to say unexpected, but she was, you know, like after Hope Solo departed the national team, then there was kind of this void for who's going to be the national team goalkeeper. And
yeah,
so she took over, and then there were question marks coming into going into the World Cup last year. And then I think she kind of shut all those concerns up, and then she's kind of continued that form into this season. And so, yeah, even though it's kind of a short season, but I think, you know, she's had a good season. And, among all these, great goalkeeping performances, she had probably one of the best ones and made a ton of saves and basically kept her team in the game. And then, and so, yeah, as whichever team is doing that, then and whichever team has the goalkeeper that's in the best form right now, I think is as the best chance of going all the way.
Yeah, I think for me, I kind of like a little bit of an underdog, but kind of a mid dog. so I think I'm gonna go with the Houston Dash. They have a really good kind of front set of players who I've heard things about, but like I said, I'm not super duper familiar, but I kind of like the makeup of their team. And from the highlights that I've seen, they look like a pretty good team. So I think I'm gonna pick the Houston Dash to go all the way.
All right. If you pick the underdog, that is the highest seed left.
I said a middle dog. It's a middle dog.
Yeah.
It's not the highest dog in the market, but it's a good dog there. All right, going on from there, let's talk about the NHL and kind of some of the troubles coming along the way for their bubble and the things that they want to do to kind of kick off the NHL season.
Yeah. The Edmonton is one of the cities that they're going to play in. One of the two cities, the other one being Toronto. The main arena that they were going to use, Rogers Place, which is where the Edmonton Oilers play, was hit with kind of a surprise summer thunderstorm. I didn't realize these summer thunderstorms were a thing in Canada, but that's, you know, that's my California privilege showing. the arena was flooded basically with the severe thunderstorm. There was damage to the roof, but I think it was mostly cosmetic. There hasn't been any structural damage. So it looks like games are still scheduled to start on August 1st. And it's just a rough thing to see, but it's not going to actually delay anything. So they're going to be fine. Kind of speaking of Canada and bubble cities, the other city is Toronto. The Canadian government has denied the, switching over to baseball now, they've denied the Toronto Blue Jays a national interest exemption to allow them to play in the Major League Baseball season. This isn't really an indictment on the Blue Jays themselves. It's because they've allowed them to participate in training camp in Toronto. The issue comes with the fact that they have to play American teams, and that is going to involve a ton of travel by the Blue Jays to leave Toronto and then go into the United States, you know, into a lot of cities that are still high risk for COVID. And on top of that, for other teams to have to cross the border into Canada to come play the Blue Jays. So it's like inviting a disease vector to come to town whenever that happens. You know, all the filthy Americans are going to come in and infect everybody. So that's still a concern, and the Canadian government is still making these decisions based off of public health concerns and not whether they want to see sports or not. So
yeah, and I mean, that's literally the best, you know, the best scenario we could ask for, which we aren't necessarily privy to here in America, is that we follow the best kind of health and scientific practices that we can.
Yeah. And they've done an okay job of dealing with their pandemic in Canada, and they want to keep it that way. So doesn't matter that the MLB season is scheduled to start in about 5 days. I think the Blue Jays are just going to have to figure something out, which I think, I don't know what's officially been discussed, but I know there's a lot of fan ideas being thrown around that, you know, they could kind of cross the lake and play in Buffalo, as their home stadium. And then that kind of keeps all the games in the United States. It's not like they have to cater to fans in Toronto, to allow them to come to games. It's these games are going to be played in empty stadiums anyways, so whether it's an empty stadium on one side of the border or the other, it kind of doesn't matter. It only really matters for the players and where they live, and I'm sure living in Buffalo probably might be a little less safe than living in Toronto for the time being. The reason why the NHL situation is different is that the NHL players are going to be in a bubble, whereas for the baseball season, there is no bubble. It's just people freely flowing from one city to another. And so there's no way to keep that under control. We're seeing even the most social distanced of all sports, sports like tennis and golf, where the athletes are still coming down with COVID. So it's, it's, and we're seeing like the start of the NHL or the NBA bubble and all the violations and other issues that are going on right now, which we'll discuss later. But it's, even when you do have the bubble, it's not a sure thing, but at least the presence of one is better than just letting, you know, bringing 25 people to town from a city that, you know, from a foreign city where you can't really trust whether they have the same protocols as you do here in Canada, quote unquote here, from a Canadian perspective. So,
it's precaution, and I think it's good precaution, you know. Yeah.
Because we're seeing the NFL does not really have the same level of care and precaution.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of these things going on with the NFL. So let's start with presenting facts to people without presenting facts to the correct set of people, right? I think that's the best way to air it. So they made this announcement with them and Oakley about this protective face shield and all these protocols and things like that that they're going to be implementing with the upcoming football season. So, you know, this is some cool thing about this shield and how it doesn't let droplets or and stuff in, but you know, still allows the players to breathe and all these other kind of things. And a lot of that seemed like good press junket stuff, except players who have kind of through this whole situation and before have started to become more vocal about the things that the NFL are doing. Very notably, J.J. Watt, who we're going to talk about a lot here in a little bit, has kind of been one of the biggest proponents in questioning a lot of the things that the NFL is presenting as safety and precaution for the players, questioning the whole idea of this face shield and face mask in the first place. And then to kind of separate from that, made a post on Twitter talking about all the things that he and other players as we'll use the word employees of the NFL know and don't know with their timeline of going back to work, right? And very well laid out kind of graphic of all the things that as he puts it, we know and we don't know. So I'm gonna read through some of these and then we'll share our thoughts. So the first slide is, we want to play. We want to be as safe as possible. The NFL can mandate the players show up to training camp regardless if any agreement has been reached between the NFL and the NFLPA, the NFL Players Association. We still have not been granted the full and proper training camp acclimation period necessary to, as recommended by the medical and training staff. We still do not know if there will be daily testing, every other day testing, etc. And then from there it goes, we still do not know if there will be preseason games or not. We still do not know how a positive COVID test will be handled in regards to others in close contact, i.e. in the huddles, direct engagement with other players and fans and things like that, coaching staff, and kind of all these things that are iterated throughout that one. A strong and fair opt-out clause for those at high risk or those with family members at high risk has still not been agreed upon. If players do not show up on time, they can be fined or considered in breach of contract, even if health and safety protocols have not been agreed upon or infectious disease emergency response plans have not been approved. And it ends with, we want to play.
Yeah, so the hashtag we want to play is kind of trending at the moment of this recording. And I think there's a lot of players speaking out on that and echoing some of the same concerns that there basically is no COVID protocol. And like, we've used that term COVID protocol to talk about what a lot of other sports are doing, that a lot of other sports have taken months to negotiate. And the NFL has had that same amount of time to do all this negotiation without having to scramble to put together a season. They're still kind of on the same schedule as they were on before. So I think the only thing that we're not even sure whether they're like allowing fans into some of these games yet, even though I think it's a pretty safe bet that they wouldn't, but they've announced this mouth shield thing, which, I was a little disappointed to see J.J. Watt speaking out against that, because nobody's really tried this thing on yet. But he's speaking from the point of view that, you know, he wore a visor once and hated how stuffy it felt in the visor. And so he doesn't want to play with a face shield or with a kind of a mouth shield. This thing is supposed to have holes in it that let you breathe. It's just multi-layered and the holes don't line up with each other. That's why it says there's no kind of direct contact. If somebody were to cough on somebody wearing one of these shields, it'll land on the shield and not land on the person's face, which I guess is the point of masks now. It's one advancement that can help, but it hasn't really kind of been distributed out to the players yet. Maybe it will during training camp coming up. But they're kind of being asked to show up to training camp without a whole lot of details taken care of. All this work done by all these other leagues, even baseball has figured out at least some sort of testing plan that, you know, they're going to test every other day or every day. And, you know, once somebody tests positive, they're going to need this many tests that are negative before they're allowed back. Is there a bubble? Is there no bubble? It's far too late for the NFL to come up with a bubble at this point. I can understand the concern about trying to deal with, you know, masks or no masks or whatever when it comes to doing training camp in summer heat, which is always something that I thought was weird. I've always thought the season should start a little bit later because of that. Um, But yeah, I mean, if there's any time to delay the season, it would be now while they try to work all this stuff out. The opt-out clauses, I think we'll have a WNBA story about that coming up. But yeah, there's just not a whole lot of details being that have been like, maybe there are things that are being worked on, but we're just not hearing a lot about them. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, outside of this face shield thing. So it's, this mouth shield thing.
But see, the thing is, and I think this is what I will give JJ Watt and a lot of these other players, right? I think very obviously, to a certain extent, they need to be involved in these talks, right? And I think player safety and player safety concerns, which means the concerns that the players have going into this, should definitely be some of the first things on the table, not these kind of parade of things that you present to everyone at the same time in a slew of safetiness, right? Like, these things should have been presented to the players, and the players should have been able to question them and their validity, their safety, things like that, and then have some kind of documentation or something, or experimentation shown to them that, hey, this is what we're looking at, this is why we think it'll keep you safe, you know, yada yada yada. I don't feel like I need to be involved in this conversation, you know what I mean? Like it now feels like there's two entities, the players and the NFL, talking at me when they really should be talking to each other, but it's kind of the only way that they're going to get there. So I think that is mostly on the NFL. So
yeah,
it's a rough thing.
I would imagine they kind of are talking to each other, the NFL and the union. Just now it's getting so close. We're like 2 weeks away from the start of camp, and this is going to be a common theme about how close we are to the start of these seasons. And so now it's the time to kind of grandstand. And, but I mean, these are legitimate concerns, and it is legitimately concerning that they haven't quite worked all this stuff out. So yeah, it's, you know, maybe taking to the media, makes it so both sides feel more incentive. As the league especially, I don't want to put too much of it. It doesn't help when the league does release something and the players kind of dismiss it offhand right away, without actually like trying this helmet and this shield on. But at the same time, it's also kind of concerning when the NFL kind of just releases this stuff and then says, hey, look at this. This is what we're doing, but without full other details for, like, here's how we're going to test, here's how we're going to do all these other things that every other league has figured out by this point. The shield is one thing, but you know, football is like the epitome of a contact sport. And all these other sports, you know, they've managed to figure out how to handle things, even when they don't expect players to come in close contact with each other. But this is a sport where you're going to have 22 people on the field piled up on top of each other and breathing in each other's air all the time. So it's more important here than in any other sport to figure this shit out, you know, an outbreak in the NFL will shut this thing down, even more so than a positive test in any other sports that we're talking about.
All right, so let's move on from the NFL trying to get players on the field and talk about teams and players trying to get themselves onto the field. We have a couple of contract things to talk about, or one kind of big contract thing to talk about, and that's Dak Prescott.
Yeah. So the deadline passed for contract extensions. And so it passed without Dak Prescott getting an extension. He's been franchise tagged, so he'll play this upcoming season, assuming we have a season, with basically a fully guaranteed $31.4 million 1 year contract. And then he'll hit free agency after that. And, I think this Dak Prescott saga has been like, it's been going on for like a year now. And, I think we've seen other quarterbacks get big extensions during this time period, most notably Patrick Mahomes, which we talked about last week. He's asking for, Prescott is asking for, I think, somewhere in the range of $40 million a year, but also kind of wants to keep it to 4 years and doesn't want to tack on an extra fifth year where he's under team control. So I think that's been like the major sticking point in these deals or in these discussions. I think it's tough. It's tough to kind of gauge how, at least for me,
yeah, you
know, I have this big ignorant blind spot when it comes to Dak Prescott. Like statistically, he is very good. I think, you know, but also statistically, Jameis Winston is very good. It's like, you know, when it comes to like yardage, you know, it's Jameis Winston and then Dak Prescott, number one and number two. But Prescott is statistically good in all the other categories too. He's like Jameis Winston without the interceptions. He's got a good team surrounding him on offense. He's got a good offensive line. He's got a good everything. And the Cowboys haven't been that productive when it comes to wins to show for it. So, you know, some of that may be the fault of the defense. I don't know enough about this to be able to judge that. It's kind of hard because you go through these lists. You know, Jason Garrett, Coach Jason Garrett may be a factor. It's hard to go through.
Like, guys, I think that everyone's kind of stumbling around the all-important question. Is Dak Prescott an elite quarterback?
Yes.
I think it's time to bring
the question.
I think it's time to bring back that debate. Is Dak Prescott elite? And I think generally a lot of people will say no, because he has a good team around him, but he hasn't, or rather the Cowboys have not gotten as far as one would hope in the playoffs with him at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
A lot of people will say that Jason Garrett was a factor in that as well. Yeah. But I think that there is an idea, there's a belief that if you have a quarterback and he's not awful and he's not hurting your team, you keep him and you pay him. And I think that's kind of where Dak Prescott is sitting. He's good enough to keep around because he's far from bad. He's far from awful. Is he Pat Mahomes? No, of course not. But I think he's good enough. He's good enough.
I think much to the same degree as JVZ, I kind of have a blind spot to Dak Prescott. I hear things about him, good and bad, but I've never done the research myself to really see. And that's notably because he plays for the Cowboys, which is a team that I have no want to ever care about, being a Giants fan. Other than the fact that I feel like the Giants should beat the Cowboys. But it's one of those things where I've just never really paid enough attention.
See, Kaz, the thing is when you have a terrible NFL franchise, it kind of allows you to pay attention to the rest of the league as a whole. And it allows me to look at other teams. And I look at the Cowboys and I say that Dak Prescott is not the weak link on their team. Mm-hmm. Their defense is solid. Their offensive line is pretty highly regarded. Zeke Elliott, everyone knows that he's an elite all-pro running back. And Dak is someone who holds his own in that conversation. I hesitate on calling him a top five quarterback in the NFL. He might be somewhere close to top 10. And I think when you've got a quarterback like that, you should probably pay him $40 million. I think that even though the market value of starting NFL quarterback is absolutely insane these days, I think that there's negotiations to be done with that number. So I'm saying he's playing with the franchise tag this year, and unless Jerry Jones, because he's a madman, just says outright, yeah, I'm not going to pay him, I'm just going to let him go, because Jerry Jones can do that. Unless he just outright says that, I think that they will come to an agreement for a long-term deal for Dak.
I'm glad you asked the top five question, because I came with a list. And it's not necessarily my list, but, like, you know, Pro Football Focus, other sites have like their, you know, a quarterback rankings. And so, like, if you were to go down this list of, you know, maybe you disagree a little bit with where people are, but you maybe can kind of agree with the general area on the list where they are. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, that's a top five there. That doesn't include Lamar Jackson, who we spent all last year talking about, the league MVP. You know, it doesn't include Tom Brady, who's, you know, old but maybe not washed up. It doesn't include Deshaun Watson, who we rave about. You know, all those guys probably in that tier, maybe not Tom Brady, but, you know, that's six or seven guys in a tier that we can clearly see is above Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is kind of at the top of the next tier. That's where I would put him, you know, kind of near Jimmy Garoppolo, near Carson Wentz, near.
I would put him in that Matthew Stafford category.
Right. The Matt Stafford tier, at the top of the Matt Stafford tier. Yeah. So if Dak Prescott was your quarterback, and you woke up one morning and found out that he was swapped out with Matt Stafford, you would say, oh, okay, we could deal with that. That's not ideal, but we could deal with that. And I think that's the play the Cowboys are making, because they went out and signed Andy Dalton to be their backup, who is literally the definition of, you know, the Dalton line is the term people use to describe a just like the middle of the road quarterback that is serviceable for your team. He's not going to lose you games. So maybe a team is better off rolling with a quarterback like Andy Dalton and using the money that they would have paid a Dak Prescott to upgrade other positions.
Or, guys, what if Jerry Jones is just going to say, screw it, I'm going to start Andy Dalton once all of this is over? Let's not forget the factor that Jerry Jones is essentially the rich Texan from The Simpsons, and he can kind of just do whatever, because he's Jerry Jones.
He's the owner of the team and the general manager of the team. So even though I think technically his son is, but yeah, he controls the money decisions, and even though there's a salary cap, so ultimately he's not, when you're talking about paying a ton of money for a quarterback. The reason why it's a concern isn't his pocketbook, but because it affects the salary cap, which is the same for everybody. But yeah, do you want to break the bank for a quarterback that you consider to be the top of the good tier, but not even really the bottom of the elite tier? I think that's the ultimate question here. I think that's one that we'll have to kind of wait for the whole season to play out. And maybe maybe Prescott blows everybody out of the water this year and shuts up all of us that think he's not an elite quarterback. And then if he does that, then I'll have no problem getting that kind of money from either the Cowboys or from somebody else. But he's making a bet on himself for this year. This is a bet that Kirk Cousins managed to do like 3 or 4 years in a row and stay healthy. And he made a ton of money doing that on a kind of a rolling 1 year guaranteed contract. So it's one that can work, but you have to stay healthy. So don't get COVID, Dak Prescott. Any Cowboys fans out there that want to educate me, hit me up on Twitter.
Keep eating that chunky soup, Dak. Keep eating that chunky soup.
Yeah, take that endorsement money. Get money wherever you can, because the league future is somewhat a little bit uncertain when it comes to the salary cap and how much money is going to be available to throw around, which I think is why Derrick Henry taking the money.
I was just talking about him staying healthy, JVZ.
Okay. I want these guys to get paid and then stay paid and be secure. So Derrick Henry is, I think he was going to play on a franchise tag this year, but kind of at the last minute, he agreed to a 4-year, $50 million contract with the Titans. And half of that is going to be fully guaranteed. So I think it's a little less guaranteed money than a lot of the other running backs. Not a lot, but like the 3 or 4 other running backs that have signed contracts recently have been able to secure. But overall, it's still a pretty hefty chunk. And when you consider his workload last year and kind of the perception that running backs that have that kind of workload eventually hit a wall and stop being productive, it's good for him to secure $25 million guaranteed now. So if the Titans cut him sometime in the next couple of years, I think he'll be able to sit on that money while the rest of the league figures out how to adjust their salary cap and scramble due to COVID. It's good for the Titans. They've kind of got their next couple of years taken care of at quarterback and running back. I think that was kind of a surprise team this year. So I think they positioned themselves to continue that success going forward. All right. This story, the Washington name to be determined later. It's kind of, some people were wondering like why now to deal with the name change. Part of it has to do with the Washington TBDs. Part of that has to do with the social justice movements that are going on around the country. But kind of the cynical person would say that a lot of that, discussing that now is partly to help distract and distance the team from the sexual harassment scandal that has just broke. If you are thinking of the cheerleading scandal that they had a couple years ago, where they basically kidnapped their cheerleaders and brought them to Costa Rica and made them kind of pimp them out to basically their special group of fans and sponsors, and confiscated their passports and basically gave them no choice but to participate in this. That happened a couple of years ago, and you would think that something like that would be a wake-up call for not just the team, but for all teams to figure out whether they have sexual harassment issues within their organization. But apparently that was not enough of a wake-up call for this team to take a good hard look at themselves, because the Washington Post came out with a story this week citing 15 current and former female employees of the team and the abuses that they've had to go through, and just how much of a cultural issue it is within the organization. They didn't call out Dan Snyder specifically for being a direct cause of any of this, that nobody directly accused him of any of this harassment, but it's kind of like the Mavs scandal from I want to say earlier this season, where all this kind of happened under his watch. And, but I think a little bit more accusatory in the sense that, that some of this was saying, you know, Dan Snyder is very verbally abusive towards his employees. So it kind of creates a culture where the employees that he's verbally abusive towards kind of pass that on to other people, and everybody's kind of just being shitty to each other. And and then part of that shittiness involves sexual harassment towards the women that work there. And yeah, I mean, it's just tough in general for women in sports to get any sort of foothold. And then when they have to deal with sexual harassment on top of all the other harassment that they have to deal with, it just struck a chord around the league with the so many of the women in media speaking out and saying, like, this is kind of the bullshit that we have to deal with every day. And it sucks to see it being such a systemic part of an NFL team. And there were a lot of other comments in this article about how, like, some of the women, you know, they've worked in politics and other places, and there's nowhere that they've seen it worse than within the Washington Football Organization. So I think that's pretty damning to read statements like that. But overall, it's a pretty long and very detailed article. A lot of the women are speaking out on anonymity because they've reached settlements with the team, and those settlements include non-disclosure agreements, and that they're not allowed to break without fear of a lawsuit. But I mean, if the NFL wants them to speak out about it, then they can kind of protect them from that, or they can indemnify them if they're sued over this. I think this is this shouldn't be the wake-up call. There were other situations in the past that should have been a wake-up call. Cultural change should be the wake-up call, but
Is when you have a person like this in charge, right? Like, he's just a terrible person, right? So obviously, like you said, it trickles down into other people, right? When kind of the culture that comes from the top is to treat people like shit, then everybody is going to be like, oh, well, you know, if that's what I'm going to do, you know, like, you're going to have followers, you're going to have leaders, right? And I think the biggest proponent, especially for the Washington Redskins, is their leadership, right? At the very top, they have a person who should not be in a leadership role. And it is an unfortunate thing, and it is going to be so much more harder to remove them, even if the name changes, even if we see some kind of reprimand or change or promise of change come from these things. None of that is going to matter, because the person at the top is always going to be there.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is very similar to the Mavs scandal, and we kind of haven't seen a whole lot come out of the Mavs scandal. I mean, Mark Cuban actually did come out and speak out about this scandal, and he's basically said, you know, Daniel Snyder needs to come out, and he needs to own this. Like Cuban did, he came out and said, you know, like, all this happened under my watch, this is my responsibility, whether I did anything or not. So, you know, because he did that, it kind of went away. There were supposed to be some internal investigations going on, or, you know, they hired outside investigators to come in and figure out what was going on and get a full accounting of all that. And then not a whole lot came out of that, at least publicly. So in a way, that story kind of went away. And I think here, I think they're hoping for the same thing to happen, for, you know, come out, say, this is bad, and we don't want it to be this way, and we're bringing in outsiders to come in and tell us how we can fix this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a year from now, we'll forget this all happened until the next thing happens. And then we'll remember that there's a systemic issue here and get mad about it. But, you know, I'm not confident that anything is going to change, or at least significantly change for the better while we still have the same people in charge. A couple people have been fired over this. But other than that, I think, if this is a systemic problem, if this is a problem that starts at the top with Daniel Snyder being a shitbag to his employees, then, I don't think anybody who's trying to report anything bad happening within the organization has anybody to go to. They basically had one HR person this entire time, trying to handle all this stuff. And so, you know, obviously nothing happens. And HR in general is there to protect the organization, not to protect the employees. So
right.
I don't know. It's sad, but unfortunately, whenever ownership goes bad, as we talked about with Donald Sterling, Amit Raisada in the Echo Fox scandal with Kelly Loeffler, and now with Dan Snyder, it's hard to get rid of them. They own the team, so forcing them to sell would at least help give the team a fighting chance to fix some of these problems, but that's just something that's really hard to do. And Dan Snyder seems to be holding on to this organization with a death grip. And
yeah, so I mean, like I said, that I for me, that is my big proponent, is you have to change things at the top to change them for real, right? You can put band-aids on things all day, every day, but unless you change something at the very top of things, nothing is actually going to change.
All right. Speaking of failed leadership at the top, we've got a scandal in the WNBA with Elena Deladon, who has been very public throughout her career about her battles with Lyme disease. She's basically had it since she was young, and it flares up every so often. She has to take 64 pills a day just to manage it, which on its own is pretty remarkable. She's managed to carve out a pretty nice career, and that's putting it lightly. She's the reigning WNBA MVP, defending champion. At this point, she is, I would say, the face of the league. And she needs a medical exemption because, she, you know, when she's immunocompromised with Lyme disease, immunocompromised people are the ones that need to be protected the most throughout this pandemic. And, so choosing, basically she shouldn't have to choose whether to play or not in the WNBA's return to play plan. She should be just kind of automatically granted a medical exemption. That does mean that she gets paid, even though she doesn't play, but I put a note in here to remind everybody that the WNBA max salary is $215,000. So while we're talking about, Dak Prescott and Derrick Henry contracts of multiple millions a year, Dak Prescott's going to get paid $30 million this year. And so it seems like the WNBA hemming and hawing over a contract that is going to be $200,000 is it seems kind of pointless. And it's pointless enough that the Mystics have said that they're going to pay her anyways, but it's just the way that, you know, the WNBA has chosen to treat the face of its league, one of the most recognizable faces in the league. And, you know, the way they came to this decision without really consulting her doctor or her team's doctor, you know, and finding out, like, what does she have to go through every day just to keep this Lyme disease in check, to keep it from flaring up. It's something where, like, even when she gets a cold, it can cause problems. So something like COVID is going to cause even more problems. And it just seems like such an obvious thing. But they've turned this into a controversy when it didn't have to be. And
I'm confused as to whether or not people are organizations, the WNBA, the NFL, all these kind of things, are thinking that in some weird way, if they make it seem like everyone's going to come back and play, and then at the last second hand out exemptions is like what they're going to do, right? So that people are invested in people playing, but then they don't have to deal with all this news of all your favorite players aren't going to play. You know, like, I'm really confused as to, like, why you wouldn't just do this. Like, I'm trying to think, is it a money thing? Is it because she's one of your best players in the league and you want to make people think that she's going to play? And then, you know, so much so that you have to live in the kayfabe of being like, oh yeah, you have to play. But then at the last second being like, well, no, we understand that, you know, you'd be at risk, so we don't want you to play. Like, because I think in this realm where players are a lot more spoken out, I don't think you can do things like that without involving them as well.
Yeah, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Can I take the super cynical route here?
Go ahead.
And say that the WNBA, as JVZ pointed out, in many ways, Elena Delladon is the face of the WNBA. Yeah. And when you have someone like that, they are a money mover for you.
Well, yeah,
brand.
They
generate revenue. And they clearly see Delladon as someone who generates revenue for them. And they're saying, not maybe with malicious intent, but more of a mindset of, we need you to play, rather than saying, we don't really care about your health, but more along the lines of, without you, our league does not generate as much revenue as it could.
I do think that's the only explanation that really makes sense. The thing is, it's a league. I mean, okay, so we always hear about, like, the WNBA runs at a loss. It has to get subsidized by NBA teams. So, I mean, I guess, okay, then they run at more of a loss without Elena Delladon involved. They run at more of a loss by having to pay her $215,000 to not play. I think she's not the only person. There are other people that are opting out, some for medical reasons, some for social justice reasons, which, you know, happens a lot more often in the NBA, in the WNBA than in other leagues, because it's a league that's very in tune with those issues. But, you know, I mean, 538 has an article that we're going to link in the show notes about, you know, which teams are kind of the hardest hit by all these players opting out. And, you know, Elena Delladon is just the latest example, maybe the biggest example, but there are other players on her tier that are choosing not to play.
Can I say something even worse?
Okay.
I'm thinking about how many of these WNBA players are opting out for various reasons. And could it be just because of the fact that, as JVZ has said, that the max salary is $250,000? Could it be that so many of these WNBA players are opting out of playing simply because they don't see playing in the WNBA as a worthwhile investment?
Yeah, like they're not going to lose that much money if they don't play. You know, $250,000 is like nothing to, you know, for those of us that don't make that much money, it's not anything to laugh at. But like if you have money saved up from your $215,000 annual salary, then maybe you would be comfortable staying home and not risking or spending this time doing something that you feel more strongly about. I think it's an indictment on that. It just feels weird that they chose to take this financial stance with Elena Delladon and not with any of these other players.
I think that harkens back to the thing me and DJM have both said, right? If your top players, if your money making players aren't playing or pseudo aren't coming back, then you probably are going to have less people invested in watching, less people invested in spending money on your product.
Yeah, it's just to me. I mean, on the same discussion regarding like how much do you lose by not playing as a player? How much is the WNBA actually going to lose from this? Their viewership was low to begin with. They weren't making money to begin with. So it's like, how much more is it going to actually hurt these team owners? I mean, most of the teams are owned by NBA teams. So they print money basically. To begin with, and yeah, they are going to lose a little bit of money due to COVID now, but you know, these are super rich people, and you know, the entire payroll of the WNBA costs less than you know, a middle of the road NBA player, a single person, mind you, playing in the NBA. So it's, you know, you're talking like this would have cost $13 million before. Now it's going to cost $20 million. And is it that significant? Is it worth the harm to the league's reputation to see them treat their best player like shit? I don't think so. It's just a really puzzling decision. You know, of all the players that you want to bend over backwards for, this is the one. And not only did they not do that, they went completely in the opposite direction, and they treated her with disrespect, and that caused her to go public with this, even more public than she already was about her disease. She posted a whole article on the Players Tribune detailing what she has to go through every day just to keep Lyme disease in check, and about how upset she is that. You know, this is a person that came back and played with three herniated discs in the WNBA finals last year. So this is not a player that is looking to just make money by not playing. And she's proven that, and to her own physical detriment, and you know, and she helped pick up. You know, Breonna Stewart was out all last year, and so Elena Delladon stepped in and kind of became this face of the league. And you know, when players step up like that, then I think they've earned the right to not be treated this way. And if they can't play, there will be other players to step in and play and take up the mantle and become new faces. You know, because that's kind of what needs to happen. Like I said at the beginning of the show, everybody's scrambling. Everybody's trying to figure stuff out. And so some of that means some players that we expect to play don't play. Mm-hmm. But when they don't, then we'll get a chance to see new people. I mean, this is Sabrina Ionescu's first season. That's what gets me excited about watching this league this season. It doesn't have to be watching the same old players playing before. We can see new faces, and we can help create new stars in the absence of the stars that have chosen not to play for whatever reason. The league is going to be okay.
I think part of the problem there is for anybody listening and for us, right? You go look at that post that we talked about, JJ Watt posting, right, on Twitter, right? And there are some dumb conversations in there where people are talking about, well, you know, I mean, you know, like, people are just like, well, what happens when somebody like has COVID? They just send the next person out there. It doesn't matter. And it's like, you know, one, no, if somebody has it, which somebody did say, like, if somebody has it, that means everybody then there needs to be tested and probably quarantined or something like that. So one person having it does not necessarily mean next man up, like, because it's a spreadable thing. So obviously, if one person already has it, multiple people probably have it or have the ability to get it. It's very contagious. Yeah. And then the other thing were so many people saying, oh, I don't want to see the next man up. I want to see such and such. And yeah, you know, like this. And I think it's like this weird thing where people forget that seeing the next guy in is just as much part of the sport as anything. Like, giving people a chance is how we get a Patrick Mahomes. It's how we get, you know, other superstars, is when we give them a chance to go out there and show what they can do.
And at the same time, like, next man up is a temporary concept. It's how you deal with the fact that you get injuries in a season. But, you know, if Elena Deladon dies from COVID, it's like, sure, you know, next man up, but, like, you know, you just killed one of the faces of your league.
Yeah. So,
like, it's at that point, it's like, you know, you got to make these decisions based off of safety. And, right, you know, and it's just not safe for her to play right now. And that sucks, but that's just the situation. That's what everybody has to deal with right now. And yeah, this is sports. Sports is a luxury. This isn't, you know, this, you know, she's not an essential worker, but, like, this is, it's like, you can't make her come out and do this. And thankfully, I don't know if we mentioned it, but the Washington Mystics have said, like, this is bullshit. We're just going to pay her anyways.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't cost that much to pay her. So, like, we're just going to pay her anyways.
All right,
they're making a decision.
I'm going to say one more thing, VZ, and this might upset some people. What you just said about the Mystics saying it's not that big a deal, we're going to pay her, I really question that, because here is the big ugly elephant in the room. The WNBA isn't exactly a billion-dollar business. So I wonder just how much of that is playing a factor into this regarding the whole situation with Elena Deladon.
Yeah, and I think that goes into what you were saying before about revenue. But I think somebody took a look at the cost benefit analysis for this year, and only for this year, to make that decision, the financial decision about this. Nobody took a look at it and said, what happens long term financially if Elena Deladon dies? And I'm like, I don't think I'm being dramatic about this. Like, if she catches this, it could kill her. You know, more than if you or I or anyone here in this podcast could catch it, or more than most people, you know, that are young and relatively healthy, even though they're, like, the science on that is still questionable right now too, about, you know, DJM just posted in the chat, a great comparison is WWE's Roman Reigns. He is the face of that company. and he is sitting out, and everybody's okay with it because he's recovering from leukemia. He's immunocompromised, and it's just not worth, even if you look at it from a purely financial perspective, if you, at least as long as you look at it long term, you see it's not worth risking it, because the amount of money that you can get from forcing him to do this right now is not worth the amount of money that you would lose long term from him being dead. That's what's been frustrating about this whole pandemic, is a lot of people are making short-term financial decisions, but you know, the economic effect of hundreds of thousands of people dying is tremendous. And so if you're going to make financial decisions, make long-term financial decisions, based off of, you know, resources and wanting to protect those resources and making sure that they are available to you in the future and not just here in the present. So, I mean, if you're going to be selfish about it, at least be long-term selfish. And the WNBA didn't do that. They just made a dumbass decision here, and now they look bad, and the effect is the same. She's just going to get paid by the team anyways, and because the team doesn't want to look bad, and they're looking out for their own long-term future. They want to make sure that this talented player that they have on their roster is still available to them, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years or however long she continues to play. They're not going to let the WNBA's dumbass decision risk that for them. So thankfully, at least somebody's looking out long term, even if it's for them and not for her, even if they don't really care about Elena Deledon and they just care about the Washington Mystics, at least somebody's looking long term here.
All right. Let's move in to our last thing of the day. Rashawn Holmes.
MVP of the Sacramento Kings this year.
MVP of the Sacramento Kings. Not playing 4D chess out here. I don't even understand this headline, let alone this story. I got tricked into violating quarantine for Postmates.
Yeah. So the NBA bubble is happening. Players are in it. Players have kind of exited quarantine at this point. They're practicing with their teams now. I think there was a lot of talk early on about the food situation. It was supposed to be, you know, the food during the quarantine period where everybody's locked in their rooms for, I think, 30, basically the equivalent of 3 days, until they could get, you know, a number of negative tests to prove that they don't have COVID. While they were being kept in there, they were getting basically box lunches and it wasn't bad food, you know, to us, like we'd be fine, but these are rich people that are accustomed to eating better food, and not just better food, but better food that they actually, whatever they want to eat at the time and not what somebody else chose for them. So now they get out of quarantine and Kelly Oubre Jr. from the Suns, one of the teams kind of competing with the Kings for the last playoff spot in the West, basically tweeted out that he found some sort of weird workaround where if Postmates delivers, you can go pick it up. As long as security is not going to watch you do this, or they're going to watch you do it, but they're not going to help you do this. They're not going to handle the food or anything else for you. So as long as you go and pick it up from the Postmates delivery person directly, everything should be fine. That's basically the idea that he came up with, the grand, brilliant idea that Kelly Oubre Jr. came up with. So he tweeted this, and then within a couple hours, a tweet came out that Rashawn Holmes tried this. And because he did this, he violated quarantine, and now he has to quarantine for the next 10 days, because he basically crossed the quarantine line. And then Kelly Oubre Jr. came out couple hours later and said, never mind, lol. I don't know if this was like an actual. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as DJM said, a trying to gain competitive advantage.
And I don't know if he intentionally meant to trick Rashawn Holmes into doing this, to trick an opponent into doing this. I think Rashawn Holmes used to play for the Suns, their former teammates. So like maybe this was just somebody messing with a friend, or maybe they came up with this idea together and one of them tried it. Either way, thankfully this is before the season. The games aren't going to start until July 30th and Holmes has to quarantine until July 21st. But that doesn't really give a lot of practice time for him to get up to speed. This is among the fact that the Kings are actually one of the hardest hit teams when it comes to COVID tests. They've had, I think, 5 players now out of the 15 on their roster that have tested positive for COVID. And then on top of that, De'Aaron Fox just injured his ankle. So it's, I thought this team was going to be able to make a run for it, but it seems like between health concerns and idiocy concerns, this team seems to be shooting itself in the foot like they have all season long. So I guess it's not really any different. In a way, it's kind of like they have for the last 14 years. So I should be used to it by now, but it's still sad every single time something like this happens. Rashawn Holmes in general, like he's a great guy. He's been a fun revelation on this team. He was signed kind of as an afterthought at the end of preseason, or at the end of kind of the signing period just before preseason. I didn't think he was going to play at all, and it turns out he carried the team through the first half of the season while the rest of the players were being bad. And he was the only one who seemed to come out and play with energy. And now he was just, he got injured and the team kind of took a nosedive after he got injured. And he was just getting back. I think he played one or two games before the pandemic hit. So not being able to see him finish out the season was a tough part of the pandemic. This totally falls under the category of Kangs, KANGZ, which if you follow that hashtag, that's basically just a running list of all the dumb shit that happens around this team. This falls under that category, but thankfully he'll be back before the season resumes. Just hopefully he can get up to speed with the rest of the team.
I mean, I'm sure he'll still be able to study all the play things, do all that, it's just the actual physical things.
He's out all quarantine to do that. It's the team work elements.
Stuff. Yeah.
Everybody's had months off. They've had like an extra, I don't want to say it's a vacation, but like they've had a physical vacation throughout all this, and so now, I mean, at training camp takes like a month to get up to speed. Like, injuries are a legitimate concern because you're asking people that have not been playing for months to just get up and play and do physical activity, and on top of not having played for this long, like the quarantine basically made it so they couldn't work out or do anything in their rooms. They couldn't go to the gym at the hotel during this quarantine period. Now that they're out, they can start working out again and start practicing with the team. But it's going to be a battle to try to get everybody up and running again and up and running at game speed. It's going to be interesting watching these first couple games to see the kind of chaos that happens. Like I said at the beginning of the show, everybody's going to be scrambling and there's going to be chaos, and it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be kind of, uniquely COVID level interesting trying to see how everybody handles this, but it's, it's not going to be the same as like the start of an NBA, of a normal NBA season. It's a restart of a previously truncated season. A lot of chaos. So it'll be interesting chaos, and hopefully the Kings can have gotten all the chaos out of the way early, and they can position themselves well to take advantage of the other chaos that every other team is going to be going through.
Yeah. All right. I think that's been our show. We've gone over a lot of topics. I feel like we're still in a wait and see for sports, but we do have NASCAR. We do have F1. There was a good F1 race today. And it's just going to kind of be seeing where we go from here. I definitely want to keep my eye on this NFL story and see how the players in the NFL work these things out. So hopefully you guys are keeping your eyes on that as well. If you see anything that you would like to bring to our attention, you could do so on Twitter. You can go over to Twitter.com/KingKaz/JVZ and just call me DJM to tell us your thoughts on all the things going on with the NFL and any other sport that you checking out.
Kaz, no just. I don't believe in justice. I'm a dictator.
As well as you can go and check out our website, sportsoddsandends.com, to catch yourself up on all the stories that we talked about on this show and more. Go on over there and check out all the links to all the stories and kind of make your own thoughts and see how you feel about these things. And I think a thing I will reiterate that JVZ will as well, watch the WNBA. It's good shit.
Don't trust their leadership.
Don't trust any leadership.